Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart, the most listened to internet radio show in the nonprofit sector, dedicated to helping your charity succeed. It's no secret that combining online and offline techniques is the key to modern-day fundraising success, and practical advice is what you need. The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart is the perfect landing point to learn from experts around the world who provide advice you can use. Ted Hart is without a doubt one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. Also a successful author, his books range from successful online fundraising to the use of social media and how to make your nonprofit green. Guests on The Nonprofit Coach are leaders in their field who share tips and trade secrets for nonprofit management and fundraising success. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, Ted and his guests help you and your organization move to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. This is a live call-in show. Add your voice by calling 347-324-3080. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at tedhart.com. Click on Radio. Don't forget to dial 347-324-3080. Now, welcome the host of The Nonprofit Coach, Ted Hart.
And welcome here to The Nonprofit Coach. We are live here in Nashville at BBCon 2014. I could not be more excited to have this special edition of The Nonprofit Coach. We will be live here from BBCon for the next 90 minutes. We will have some of the top experts that are here speaking at BBCon with us here today. As the introduction mentioned, this is a live call-in show, so please feel free to call in and ask questions of our guests. Make sure that you press the number one so that you will raise your hand on the switchboard so that I know that you're not just listening in, but you want to ask a question as well. You can join us over in the chat room. I can see some folks over in the chat room. You can ask questions there, or you can email me today at tedhart@tedhart.com. For those of you who are familiar with The Nonprofit Coach, we always start with this. We have some very special guests here to kick off the show. Shannon Doolittle is here. She is a donor happy coach. Shannon is a fundraising and donor happiness coach who helps nonprofits retain more donors, raise more money, and do more good. An internationally recognized speaker and trainer, Shannon loves sharing the know-how fundraisers need to keep their donors feeling appreciated and needed while making their jobs as do-gooders feel fun and inspiring. Also joining us in this segment of The Nonprofit Coach is Vanessa Chase. Vanessa is a fundraising and communications strategist who founded the StoryTellingNonprofit.com to help nonprofits connect in more meaningful ways with donors through stories and stewardship. She works with nonprofits throughout North America, including the BC Children's Hospital Foundation, Duke and Gospel Mission, and Cancer Care Connection, and is an internationally recognized speaker. Of course, the most important thing is that you are both internationally recognized, which is why you are here on The Nonprofit Coach, because we only have the very best people here on The Nonprofit Coach. And I love your topic. I love the happiness factor. We've talked about this on The Nonprofit Coach many times with many guests, that the doom and gloom of give now or we're going to go out of business and feel sorry for us form of fundraising, while there are examples of how that is successful from time to time, has a shelf life. And I think donors are smarter than that. And when I see happiness in front of doom and gloom, I start feeling happy. So why don't we start off with the donor happiness coach, of course, Shannon Doolittle. Tell us a little bit about your background and why you feel strongly about this topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me here. So my background is I've been fundraising for 15 years now. And part of that, I started out as an event fundraiser, right, as an event, and try to get donors to come to the event, which is give a lot. And what would end up happening is we weren't telling the right stories, or right? I worked with an organization, my organization, where a lot of people wanted to focus on stories and put up really shocking photos and really depress people into giving all those.
And Vanessa, you are the storytelling nonprofit.com guru. So bring us forward a little bit more in terms of this concept of a role for the donor, because I think when it's doom and gloom, when it's the shocking photos and it's overwhelming, we have to go out of business, give by midnight, tonight sort of approach, there isn't a role for the donor in that other than the checkbook. But it sounds in storytelling, there's more of an active role of the donor than just the pocketbook.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that a larger vision that the organization has than you can be part of. I think when you tell great stories that show you that vision and align themselves with you, they think that it can be a part of the transformation that somebody wanted to feel bigger about all the
this concept of being happy and telling a happy story. Here on the Nonprofit Coach, we get into the nitty gritty. We don't just talk about theory. So it's easy to say that. It's easy to say it's the happy story, it's the hero and the donor. But give us some concrete examples of how, you know, if you've just been in that mode, and the way we've always done it is we tell the horrible things that will happen if you don't give your money, how do you turn that culture around within an organization?
I think part of it is that you have to become a donor to another organization. And what that essentially means is that the donor is at the heart of every communication that you do. And that's how you turn things around, because we are focusing on the organization itself. We are focusing on everything we do as an organization, as an organization to make things better. You're not giving the donor a role at all. I mean, you're pretty much just saying, hey, write us a check. We'll keep doing what we're doing, and we don't really care about you. And that's just so not a good thing. So I think that's how you turn around is you say to yourself, how can we do the person? And at that point, you can start to ask yourself, how does this make others feel? And anytime the answer is, well, it's going to make you feel guilty, it's going to make you feel sad, you're not going to develop a long-lasting relationship.
So we understand from our sound keepers that we are not going to sound up high enough, so we're going to do this a little bit differently. The microphone and the system right here. I'm just helping with my guests here understand. It's always hard being the first, so
yes.
We have to try out the sound in various different ways. So, donor-centric, okay, you hear that a lot, and you're being taught. There are lots and lots of sessions that are going to talk to you about being donor-centric. But at the same time, I'm a university, I'm a school, I'm a hospital, I've got a lot of other things going on. So how does my department that I'm involved with actually make that happen?
Really great question. We talked about this yesterday, actually, in our educational organization. Specifically that when you're in a big institution like a hospital or a university, the best thing you can do to become more donor-centered is to really break down the bias. Everyone has to be able to think that you want to use interaction. And it's really important to recognize that we can say and to collaborate well and to really coordinate the messaging, marketing, everything, so that you're presenting the same brand.
Again, that sounds so much easier said than done, because particularly for larger organizations that may have fundraising is separate from marketing, separate from communications, PR. My experience has been that some of those folks feel that fundraising is kind of dirty, that kind of messes up my messaging. What are some of the strategies, concrete things that you can suggest to our listeners and those here listening live here at BBCon on exactly how can you start changing that culture? It's not going to happen overnight, but what are some of the key indicators that you can share with leadership and others to say that this is worth it? It's not just about the money. There's something bigger in it, isn't there?
So I think there's two strategies that you could use. The first is something that I did when I worked in my in-hospital foundation here in a large organization, and that is you ask your marketing department to actually attend some of your fundraising committees with the board of your foundation. You really include them in that, so that they understand what's happening and conversations that are going on. So that's one strategy. strategy, and that means you also go to marketing meetings. That means that you also say, hey, I would love to go to your career strategy meetings as well and represent that donor in those meetings. So that's one strategy. And another strategy that you can use as well is polling your peers. So if you know another university is doing an amazing job with this, get on the phone and say, hey, can you provide some peer support to my executive director or to some VPs in my institution so that they can see that this works? Because coming from me internally, that's not going to move the needle. But of course, if they get, you know, that social proof from a peer, all of a sudden they're going to move that competition.
So this is such an interesting topic because when you start bringing this up, it makes it makes us have to look internally to ourselves. And as fundraisers, we're usually the ones who are pointing at others that they're not doing enough, they're not supporting enough. And we are oftentimes living in glass houses because what Shannon is saying is we actually have to be part of that team. We have to engage others as opposed to standing back and saying, you don't engage us enough. You don't play with us enough. You don't support us enough. So what about this whole team, and do we have to do some inner soul searching as fundraisers in terms of how much of that team we really are?
I think so. I mean, I think one of the things that's really important is
taking them to special. That's what's going to be important. How can we orient our story that we need to be telling both visually and externally.
And that's what do you think about the internal story, the external story?
I definitely agree with what Shannon said. I think there's so much more information to be done to really change the story that we tell about our organization. I remember a lot of talks with the nonprofits, and oftentimes I see them dealing with this narrative that they're poor, they're under resourced, they're under staffed, and this kind of internal story that they tell themselves really fuels their messaging, their marketing, their fundraising to this and that you can story like they're talking about in the beginning. And the ones that stand out and as soon as they started to change how they felt about the network, their messaging started to change from like 2 years. Okay.
So this topic of stories coming nonprofit, what do you cover on that website? Do you give examples of great stories that are being told? And at the same time, you give an idea of how they develop, how they develop that story.
Yeah, so we cover quite a wide range of content on the blog, and other nonprofits are working with the job on it. So we've gotten really great interviews from a lot of communication fundraising professionals, sharing that they've learned about storytelling, how they do it, what their best skills are. In addition to that, too, I also share how do we work with our colleagues to find the
great stories? So, Shannon, so much of storytelling today is social media. So, how does social media fit into this overall picture that you're thinking of as a happy nonprofit?
Yeah, I think that's great. That's a great question. So, when it comes to social media, what you want to make sure that you're doing is remember, you're only up the list. You've got a few seconds to make an impact. And I think that you need to be using social media to say thank you, to express gratitude to donors. You need to share short snippets of how donor dollars have made an impact and made a change. So it's maybe you're a foster care adoption agency, so maybe every Thursday you have an editorial calendar that on every Thursday we're going to share a story about a foster care that was adopted into a forever family. And then at the same time, we're going to highlight a few donors that made that work possible. You know, maybe on Monday you're just highlighting something about a donor that people wouldn't know so that other donors on your social media feed feel like, wow, I can relate to that other donor and there's a peer group here that I really love to be part of. This feels like a family. So it's kind of figuring out you've got 5 days a week basically, and if you're not, you know, doing something on the weekend, figure out your editorial calendar and every day, Monday through Friday, what are you doing to thank your donor or to share a story in which the donor has some type of impact. So you can constantly reconnect that impact to the fact that it was donor dollars that made it happen.
I hear so often from people who say, well, I can't do that every day. I'm so busy. My answer is usually, if you can't think of something to say in 140 characters, you've got a bigger problem than I can solve. But that's kind of a quip. How do you actually turn that around and really become involved in social media?
Well, I was talking to someone recently who said, you know, content is king in this day and age. And I thought it was a really great point.
I didn't hear. What was queen?
Consistency.
Okay, consistency.
Yeah, consistency. And if that's something that's so crazy with social media, the more that you are consistent, you show up, you engage with people, you have conversations, one side of megaphone projecting your message to the world, you start to really cultivate that great community around social media, around the work that you're doing. It's really powerful tool. In terms of making time for making an editorial calendar is a great place to start if you organize yourself. And you just schedule regular time in your calendar every day. Maybe it's 15 minutes, maybe it's 10 minutes, whatever it is. Make time every day, you're able to schedule things for bringing content, wherever that may be. And I think that helps handle the community really well.
I love this concept of consistency and viewing this as just a regular part of your workday, just like It would be hard to believe that an executive today would not read your email page, would not check the phone calls daily, would not. So these are habits, aren't they?
Yep.
This is how you perceive a sense of community.
Yep.
So talk to me a little more about how all this fits into an overall sense of community and not just sort of a megaphone yelling at your community.
Yeah. I love that you said consistency is key, and it's all the C's, consistency and community and all of those good things. So you have to think of it as a family. So there are things that we do as habits, or even I don't ever like to use analogy about maybe marriages, but in this sense it's true that you got to work really hard at it, or things will start to fall apart. So the whole thing about community is holding information for the community. We always say, especially in social media, nothing kills a conversation faster than a period or an exclamation mark. So you constantly want to have your last sentence end in a question mark, because the whole idea is I'm sharing something with you, but what's more important to me is what's going on in your life. What's more important to me is relating back to you and seeing how I can be of service to you. So I would say that builds a sense of community, constantly asking for feedback or asking to know a little bit more about your donor or your supporters. I love that whole adage about ask for money, get advice, ask for advice, get money, and I think that's very true. So you have to constantly ask yourself, am I consistently asking people to tell me a little bit more about themselves and why they made us the gift? Those kind of questions for the community.
Whoa. I can't tell you how many nonprofits that I have given exactly that advice to, and what I hear back is, whoa, wait a minute, what if somebody posts something mean? What if somebody posts something untrue? And apparently nonprofits, they think again that just the mere thought of someone saying something mean is enough to have us go hiding under a rock. So what do you say to someone who is nodding their head to this entire segment and saying, yeah, ladies, you already know what we're talking about. Oh, but well, we would never be able to do that because, what do you say to them?
Well, I think as a representative of a much larger problem in the sector that goes over its bigger, so much of the things we want to do is really want to push the envelope, training your team, look at community in new ways. And I think it's always a small process, so you're not going to dive into the pool currently. So you have to find a little action that you can take where you put some social experience to think a little bit new and a little bit different. Whether that's maybe looking at a story on your social media channel, whether it's asking one question where you're actually getting feedback from that channel. Try and help see what happens. Evaluate it. I think doing evaluation of what you're doing on the line is really important to figure out.
I really could not agree with you more. I mean, what I always share with folks is that you cannot be part of that community, not just expecting the community to be there for you. So that the really hard thing for most people to get a concept around is, if you want to be active on social media, you have to learn to be social. And being social is very scary. I mean, for a lot of people, it's scary. I still am scary now because you really do have to engage. So the expectation is, well, if I send out a tweet, then people will love me and they will send us money. But engaging in a dialogue is really where your long-term solution is going to be. I often share, and I want to ask you both to sort of reflect on this, that one of the last scary things about the internet, of course, but one of the wonderful things about the internet is that it does over time tend to find that little place. So that if someone says something mean, untrue, there are others besides you who should be part of your community who can say, well, that's really interesting, but that's not my experience. My experience is this. There's nothing more powerful than someone who's had that real life experience sharing it who's not on the discussion. So reflect on how does that turn the discussion around?
I like that. And here's something that I do on social media when there is something, when somebody comes and asks a question. What I will immediately do is either retweet it, or if it's on Facebook, I will post a question that says, I would love to hear what others in our community think about this comment, so that it really is putting it on our allies and our ambassadors to do that work for us. Because in a sense, when they start to be super confident about about doing that for us, that means I've got a whole other level of engagement going on with my supporters. So I think that's part of it, is to rally around your community and to let them do the work for you. But the other thing that I would say, too, is going back to this idea of being a servant to your community. One of the things that I had talked about yesterday is that you have to find ways to serve your donors. So, say for example, if you're a pet shelter, I said that we have surveyed people and said, what's on your mind right now? And it was around the 4th of July. And so people said, you know, gosh, it's 4th of July, my dog's going to go crazy. And so what we did is we put out a mini ebook on how to make your pet feel comfortable around fireworks. I mean, so that's how you're of service. So it's not only asking your community to do things for you, but you have to put money in the piggy bank before you, you know, you take money out to ask them to be there for you.
Yeah, that's a really great example, Shannon. I like that one a lot. I think that, you know, when we talk about building the community of people and building entities, you know, developing champions, building people who are diehard advocates of our cause, I think it's really important to be able to share those stories that our community shares with us and be able to create that dialogue between them. I think one of the powerful things for storytelling is the empathy to create, to be share real experiences with other people. Themselves in, and they understand why they're part of our tradition, why that's inspiring to them. And so I think, like as Shannon said, when you repost a comment that maybe you didn't agree with and you ask others to share their thoughts on that, you really start to build experiences and make those connections with people, which is really
important. That really seems like sort of advanced social media, you know, to have that level of confidence in your own service model to say, you know, here's something that we don't necessarily agree with, but what do you folks think of it? And I think that level of confidence then sends a signal to donors to say, well, we're with the winning team. Now, this is a team that isn't just with their hand out every minute, but they are so confident in their model that they can actually engage a community. So let's bring us back to where we started and this whole notion of a happy donor and from the story that donor being a hero and being donor centered, what is the balance between what you're doing offline versus what you're doing online? And how does a small shop? We have a lot of small shops who listen to the show or who are busy time. How do they find that balance to still have a day job? You know, they do have to raise money. So how do they justify themselves the balance?
I think the best answer I can give to that is that it really depends on where your donors and your community are. So if you don't know how they want to communicate with us, it's hard to make the decision about where to spend that time. So if you have the opportunity to survey them, which you always do, it's a great idea to find out what channels they're using, where they're at online, how they want to hear from you. And I think that'll really help you to prioritize what your options are and how you can best get in touch with them and build a community on for them online.
Yeah, I agree as well. Just this idea about balance is that a lot of times some organizations just go to shiny world and they think, gosh, what's the next big thing on social media? I need to be on social media. I think that's a great point that you have to know where your donors live, where they're getting their information, and to say, you know what, we're going to still do print and we're going to test, but we're going to test what are we getting back in terms of feedback. If there's a reply envelope, are we actually getting donations from there? Sending out emails and saying, gosh, what's the open rate on these emails? What are we doing right? Test subject lines to see what resonates more with donors that's going to get them to click it. Look at your donate button. How many people are clicking on it? You know, what's the conversion rate on it? This seems like advanced stuff, but it really is. You just got to get good with your data. And data is not scary. And the one thing that I love is, and data doesn't lie. That's the great thing. You know, anecdotally, you don't know the truth, but data tells you what it is. And so I would say just get used to looking at your data, because that's going to help you be more effective. That's going to tell you, should I be spending more time online or offline? Who's engaging with us more? And that's going to get you to a better place.
Well, Shannon is always so smart to tie this all the way back to why we're here at Meeting Time. So data is important. And I think if Shannon says, you know, it doesn't lie, which is terrific. But I think for a lot of people, it is very scary, because it might have seemed easier when I could go with my gut, or I could go with sort of the ones and the truths, but now I have to actually manage my facts. And that, I think, really can help your budget, but it also requires a lot of skill. So for a lot of our listeners who may still be hoping that this whole inter-ready thing is kind of a fad, how do we help them feel comfortable that they can succeed in this new year?
Great question, Ted. I think picking a couple of key metrics to look at is a really great place to start. And people often get overwhelmed. There's so much they can do, so many things they can be measuring. And they don't have to do it all. And I think that's a big myth that, you know, they really do have to be on every social media channel doing everything all the time. And so to be able to pick a couple of key metrics that they can look at and feel really confident in to build that confidence, I feel really great to start picking up solutions.
Well, we are just running to the end of your segment, which is absolutely fantastic. I'm so glad that we started with the donor happiness coach and the story of the nonprofit guru. So before I let you go, ladies, please put your name again and how can I listeners reach you?
So I would love to talk with any of your listeners. I think that I learned from everybody. So if you could come over and say hi, I would love that. You can find me at Shannon, shannondoolittlewo.com. And there's a little contact form. And I just love talking with people. So don't be surprised if when you leave your number, I call you. Because I always love learning from other people that are, like you said, in the trenches, doing the work, trying to help them figure out what's the best tactic for you.
Likewise, I always enjoy talking to people, hearing about their work, their efforts. You can touch me at storiesfornonprofits.com, and also very active on Twitter. You can find me at
Perfect. Ladies, that was Shannon Newell and Detective Chase here live from Nashville here at BBCon 2014. We're going to have a word from Google, and when we come back, we will have our next guest here on Shannon's.
Life, it's busy. Wouldn't it be nice to have a central place where you could save what's on your mind? With Google Keep, you can stay on top of your world by quickly and easily organizing everything you want to remember. No matter where you are, finalize door list for Thursday's gig. So when you find inspiration, you can file away your ideas. And Google Keep stores them safely across all your devices. And when the time comes, you'll have everything covered. Save what's on your mind. Google Keep.
We are live here, back here on the Nonprofit Coach. Don't forget, this is a live call-in show. You can call in at 347-324-3080. Make sure you press number one. Let me know that you're on the switchboard and want to ask a question and not just listening, which you are, of course, also welcome to do by calling 347-324-3080. You can join us in the chat room. There are a number of people there. You can ask questions there, or you can email me today at tedhart@tedhart.com. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, we have Mary Pat Danello. She is an experienced executive with a keen interest in the nonprofit sector. She has been fortunate to combine her interest in technology, fundraising, nonprofits, and leadership in her personal life and professional career. Mary Pat joined Blackbaud in 2011 as Vice President of Marketing. Previously, she served as CEO of Mission Research, makers of GiftWorks fundraising software for small nonprofits in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. The first decade of her career was spent as systems engineer and project manager with EDS. Now, the topic that we've got here today, Mary Pat, I do just want to make a note. We are having a little bit of sound trouble, so we're speaking into here and then speaking into here as well. So those of you who are listening, we are working on that sound problem. Now, Mary Pat is here to talk to us about Blackbaud's Razor's Edge NXT and Financial Edge NXT, and we are very keen to know about both of these. So, Mary Pat, take it away.
Great. Thanks for having me. I just came out of the roadmap session for Razor's Edge NXT, and unfortunately, the Financial Edge NXT session was at the same time, so I couldn't be in two places at once. But it was personally gratifying to watch the reaction of the crowd and the excitement of the crowd and the Twitter feed and the palpable relief and excitement that the Razor's Edge NLP is the answer to a lot of things. On my way out of the session, I heard from a lot of the people leaving the Financial Edge NXT session who delivered similar feedback. So I think our goal to excite and delight our customers here at BBCon was met and even exceeded. So just a little bit about what Raven's Edge NXT and Financial Edge NXT are. They're new solutions. Actually, I'll focus on Raven's Edge NXT first. It's a new solution that we call Smart. It's a smart solution and for fundraising and relationship management. It basically takes the foundational power of the Razor's Edge and adds all kinds of innovation, all delivered in the cloud. It's going to be accessible by a limited number of users. It features prescriptive analytics, built-in payment processing, strengthened marketing outreach. Everything that you need is included in it. All of this is delivered in a brand new, goal-based user interface that is designed for how nonprofits work. So I think what got people really excited is we initially are focusing on the fundraising goal in the nonprofit, and there were actually demos where you could see the new interface that not only serves up information in a beautiful, clean, intuitive way, but it also offers suggestions on what to do next. So it's based on information in your data. So if something's missing, it'll suggest how to add it. If somebody hasn't been reached, it'll notify you that somebody needs to be contacted. So it's proactive in recognizing what needs to happen and offering up those recommendations.
So for a lot of my listeners, probably not so much people here at BBCon, because I think if you come to BBCon, you are maybe a little bit more with it.
Yes.
But there are a lot of listeners, or maybe even a lot of customers of Blackbaud who have been long-time customers of Blackbaud, and all they really know is that legacy system that they bought long ago that was there when they inherited their job, and they took out the computer, and it still processes gifts and it still prints out reports. Blackbaud has grown up a lot since just the legacy data software business. This is sort of that next generation of lean cloud and intuitive approach to using Blackbaud. So for those who may not be familiar with the direction that Blackbaud is going and why NXT is that next big step, how does it connect those?
So we all know the big trends that are out there, or maybe we don't, but there's a lot happening. The world is going more mobile. People aren't working in their offices. They're on the go. They're using tablets. So that's a trend we need to capitalize on. I'm looking at Ted with all those devices. Basically, the whole cluster right in front of me. So we know that that's the way people work, and that's the way we need to provide our solutions. That's one big trend. We also know that in the cloud, if we can put our solutions in the cloud, it will be easier for organizations. It'll eliminate a lot of the IT hassle that they experience. It can always be current, always on, not have to deal with upgrades, etc. We know that online fundraising is where the world is going, but we've built that in. We want everyone to be able to maximize that, not even emerging, but very well established and defined trend in movement online. We know that crowdfunding is emerging as a very strong source of fundraising for organizations and that they need to capitalize on. We've actually integrated our crowdfunding solution, Everyday Hero, into Razor's Edge and NXT. So the bottom line is there's a lot happening in the world of fundraising, the world of technology. We have a lot of deep understanding within Blackbaud of best practices that we try to bake into the solution so that it's actually a solution that will make you better at your job by using it. We also get wonderful feedback daily by the thousands of customers that you see here telling us what they need to do their job more effectively. So we try to incorporate all of that in, the best practices, learning from our customers, the major happening with the best tech, the cutting edge modern technology.
this is a very exciting, of course, for a lot of people. And when you are a customer who is relied on Microsoft
yes.
so long, and now to have all of these tools come together, I love the fact that you have thought about bottom line underlying IT needs of nonprofits.
Yes.
Whether you're a small nonprofit or a large nonprofit, IT solutions are often the hardest things to manage because you may not have that expertise and you may lack the ability to hire people who have that kind of expertise. Particularly if you're a small nonprofit, even if you're a large nonprofit, you're often sort of end of the line, end of the food chain before anybody really pays attention to their needs. This sounds like NXT really puts you at the head of the class without needing to have less expertise. Is that right?
I couldn't have said it better myself, Ken. In fact, you want to help our marketing team out a little bit. You said that very well. But really, we want organizations to focus on their mission, and everybody here wants to focus on their mission. We want to make sure that they always have the most current solution that we have. So with Greater Bench NXT and Financial NXT, we're going to be having regular releases every 1 to 2 months. In the past, that might have involved get a release. It might have come once or twice a year. It would involve scheduling time. It would involve going to every organization. It would involve major organizational upheaval. Now, you're always current. You're always on. And all of those international state hours and time and expense that now can be focused and redirected in a more effective way.
Well, this, again, is extremely exciting. For a lot of people, and here on the nonprofit industry, so we do really focus on sort of mid-level, smaller nonprofits who don't have the capacity to hire lots of experts and consultants to come in and help them. So NXT is really there to come to your aid and make it easy. You don't even really need to understand the underlying technology now. NXT is going to make it possible for you to really just do the job you want to do. And not sort of be that expensive professional in your office. Is that right?
Again, you've got it. And and better yet, we're actually going to be, on top of all of that, that we're going to be expanding the access that people in organizations have with an experience with Greater Edge NXT. We're offering unlimited usage so that everybody in the organization can experience the great smartness that the solution is still providing. So we want to put basically the data and the power to all the people in the organization, not just the limited few that can understand it, interpret it, and help those people by empowering their fundraisers and frontline people, help the DBAs by training them up to do more strategic and effective things. By offering this in the cloud, we're able to put it in the hands of everybody very easily.
You mentioned that when you first started.
Yes.
I'm so glad that you brought us back
yes.
to that. I did want to explore that with you because what that says to me is that Blackbaud is inviting creativity in the use of data. Now that it's accessible by others within your organization, people frontline finance, people frontline administration now can be more knowledgeable and run reports and see what's happening in fundraising rather than sort of going to, the Oracle or fundraising. And that says to me that this is going to expand the capacity of fundraising to be ever present in an organization just at the time that they need it to be ever present in an organization.
Absolutely. I think with Greater Bench NXT, we're going to be putting unprecedented information, intelligence, power in the hands of every single person in that organization. By the way, I said that we were starting with a fundraising role. There are many more right behind it to be added. So we're not stopping with fundraising experience. We're rapidly adding additional experiences to really positively impact every single role in our nonprofit.
Well, it's very exciting to have you here to talk about NXT. But before I let you go, I'm really just very curious about for Blackbaud, because Blackbaud has expanded and grown, and there are so many different products that are available, so many companies that have come together under this umbrella. That's got to be a challenge to your position.
So you're right, and we do have a large growth organization. I'm vice president of marketing for our general market business unit, which is really focused on the needs of the small mid market, kind of like what you said you're focused on. So that is where I focus. And yes, we have had a very vast portfolio. I think what you're seeing here today, and probably anybody in attendance is seeing on it, that a new Blackwater is emerging, and we are more confidently directing our people into the portfolio of the future. Oh no, you think you should have a good. I don't think you made for radio.
Yes.
Waiting to make that joke. Yeah. in any case, it is challenging and it's also rewarding. At this point, we have solutions for nonprofits wherever they are in their money cycle. So there are CRM and relationship management portfolio. We have each category for the organizations that need something small and simple. We have Raiders Edge 7 that people know and love. Now we have this very exciting addition of Raiders Edge NXT coming in. We have Luminate CRM for organizations that are using and need to use the Salesforce platform. And we have Blackwater CRM for enterprise. It's actually wonderful to be able to serve nonprofits of all shapes and sizes, regardless of their needs. It does take a little while to make sure that everything that is clear to the whole market, but hopefully they see that we're covering it all and can meet the needs of almost any nonprofit.
Well, you must be very excited to be here at MeetingCon and to feel the energy in this room that we're in and in all the sessions. What does BBCon say to a marketer like you in terms of positioning Blackbaud in the marketplace?
So our theme is Power On, and that's kind of the vibe that Blackbaud these days. We have a new leader, and Mike Giannone, who works the whole culture is energized, motivated, we had a new day. I think anybody who's here would have to agree that there is new energy, new focus on quality, new solutions, new expertise emerging like never before. And Power On is pretty apropos to the vibe of here today. So it's a great time to work at Blackbaud and it's a great time to be a Blackbaud customer.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and Blackbaud has always been very supportive of the Nonprofit Coach radio show, and I was founder of the Eat Lamprey Foundation, all the way back to Fox Wall was on our board of directors, so we have a long affiliation with Blackbaud, so it's great to see that the company keeps reinventing itself and staying relevant within an extremely changing market, and one that for a lot of nonprofits is important but not core. And so finding a technology partner that you can rely on, I think it's part of the secret for that success. So I do need to move on to my next guest, but before I let you go, please let my guests know how they can reach you.
Okay, this will be a little bit of a mouthful, but anyone can email me at Mary Pat, push it all together, MaryPat@blackbaud.com. I'm also on Twitter at MPE. And
you can find me on LinkedIn. Terrific. Well, Mary Pat, thank you so much for being my guest here live at BBCon here in Nashville. This is the Nonprofit Coach radio show. We're going to have a little word from Google Maps, and then we'll be back with our next guest.
When you have a great idea and need to work with others to bring it to life, how do you do it? Sometimes it's tough because the people you work with are in different places, with different schedules, using different devices. Google Apps lets you bring ideas to life with others. Here's how. Start with email that offers more. Gmail does more than send and receive emails. It connects people and lets you chat instantly while viewing a snapshot of your team's relevant activities and access to everything they shared with you. With Google Docs, there's only one version for everyone to work on. Share easily with the right people without email attachments or compatibility hassles.
Yes, we did the session yesterday.
And work together on the same docks at the same time in a way that simply makes sense. Edit and interact easily with integrated social commenting. Google Calendar makes it easy to share schedules and find times to meet, and schedule or update meetings with a few clicks. Everyone can't be in the same place at the same time, but Google Apps lets you work together from any place. With multi-way video chat, you'll feel like you're all in the same room. While screen sharing and integration with Google Docs lets you work with more people from anywhere, on any device, even on your mobile phone or tablet. Work with any team at any time, from any place, on any device. Google Apps. Work in the future, today. To learn more, go to google.com/apps.
And we are back here live on the Nonprofit Coach Radio Show with our next guest, Tom Pate, who is Vice President for Cloud Transformation at Blackbaud. For 25 years, he has been all about organizational transformation across both profit and nonprofit sectors. He is currently responsible for driving Blackbaud's internal efforts to become a cloud-oriented company. Of course, we just heard from Mary Pat and excitement around NXT and the announcement there, which is all about moving into the cloud. And he also serves as board chair for the Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana Make-A-Wish chapter, so that's quite admirable of you. Also joining us during this segment is Tony Borg, who is Blackbaud's Chief Financial Officer and Senior Vice President of Finance and Administration. He has served as Chief Financial Officer at Blackbaud since November 2011, and as you might expect, he's responsible for financial reporting and controls and all the things that drive people-focused, particularly fundraisers. So, gentlemen, we are here live on the Nonprofit Coach, and our topic really is about strategy. And we're hearing about all the great products, all the companies coming together, and how Blackbaud is really focused on helping nonprofits, regardless of size, be able to succeed in an ever-changing world. So we're going to start off with Tom to talk about this notion of strategy. I don't want to go immediately over to Tony, who's going to help us understand how you speak this language to the others.
Thanks, Ted. We spent yesterday with about 200 of our friends here at the convention talking about the importance of strategy. Our observation is that while you can have a great set of tools to enable your processes, enable your fundraising, which we, of course, believe we have at Blackbaud, and they're getting better, as you heard Mary Pat talking about NXT, it's very important, perhaps equally, if not more important, to know where you're going. It's like driving a car, knowing where you're going to end up, and you're delivering random acts of fundraising or random acts of program delivery. So our message, along with the power of the technology, is to know where you're going, have a strategy, understand the environment, understand the things that are influencing you as a charity, to make sure that you and your board have thought through how to deliver those things, how to manage those things, and have set out the 3-year view. Too many charities, too many boards focus on next year, what we have to do next year in order to get this done. And that's important, right? Equally, if not more important, to understand what's happening over the next 3 years. So have a strategy in place, understand the environment, think through the options, think through the 5 things you've got to do in order to deliver on that strategy, and then feed those into your budget process.
Thanks, Tom, for leading there. We had an interesting discussion session yesterday. I got some good questions today that we talked about strategies. We spent quite a bit of time walking through, I think, the precept of the discussion was budget, as you said earlier, which can always be a pitfall and fun time for everybody. But we started out thinking, how do you make a budgeting cycle more effective? We spent quite a bit of time going through the fact that, and then Tom's point, building a long-range strategy into that plan of how you're going to utilize the resources you have available, which we know in this space are always limited. Seldom have we ever found that we have too many resources. And we had a good discussion about building the strategy and plan, how to go about reallocating resources each year, building an annual operating plan.
plan that delivers towards the goal that you've outlined in your long-range plan and stuff. So what you want to accomplish in the next 3 to 5 years is that you said that the environment's changing quickly, right? How people give is changing. Millennials coming up, them giving online and all the crowdfunding places. There's a lot going on, and all the more reason we believe that you have tools and solutions like we offer, but also how you practice business. And we walk through the concepts of building annual plans that drive your long-range strategy. Those then result in budget, right, which is really kind of the result of your annual operating plans. And then you really need to revisit the metrics and goals you set for yourself throughout the year so that you don't wait to the end of the year to realize you're off track, right, so you can make quick adjustments. Some good discussions on that, some interesting discussions on interaction that nonprofits have with the boards. Tom and I have firsthand knowledge of that. We both have been on Maker's Talk, still on Maker's Talk. That's where we met. Tom really, and the team, has done some phenomenal things to make wish. A lot of this strategic approach has really made a big difference in that chapter of the grant solutions. It was some really exciting questions, and it's hard questions to answer. A couple of them we got into. I know how far we want to try to go today, but the interaction of the board with the organizations themselves, and who's actually driving the strategies. And we had one good question was about a bit of complacency almost, right? So the organization was doing quite well and was meeting their annual objectives. And one of the next questions we got was, how do we change the really big authority to do something more or better or different? When the board and the leadership team were comfortable with council. So this was some, I thought, very good feedback.
Tony, it's such a rare opportunity to have someone with your knowledge status as an actual CFO here. I really want to ask you to delve in for my listeners and those here at BBCon. There's often a disconnect between the chief fundraiser, the fundraising team, and the financer, or the CFO, who, you know, first of all, sees all funds as fungible and things and is moving on the ground, which we know fundraising is not true. But also just sees this as a process where you go through the door and not a series of relationships. How do you build those interviews, and what are the messages that are meaningful to CFOs that can hear that this, the CFOs will actually listen?
That's a really good question. We hit on a little bit yesterday in our session as well. I think one of our discussion topics got on to, how do I convince my CFO to free up the purse strings, right? Because we needed more resources to put in that money in your advertising. The question, I need our long-term objectives, right? Which is raise more money. And one of the discussion topics we got into on that question was the fact that we should actually make certain that you manage the number you have, right? I think we had that sort of mic, so the comments and some of the sessions we talked a lot about. Donor retention, making sure that you're taking advantage of the folks that you already have in-house, right, that already support the organization. I think that goes to the CFO as well. And Tom knows this firsthand, and I pushed on him, and I pushed on him, pushing every chair of the board I've been on about making sure we nurture those relationships. And I think CFOs are no different than you and any other individual giving to an organization. You have to pull on heartstrings for the day. You have to see that you're actually adding value and saying, CFO, you're talking to them, what is that mission you're delivering on, and how do you ensure the CFO that it's a big return on the investment? So, more so than many, and you're seeing this more and more with organizations, they want to know what return they're getting on that investment. Not that I'm just going to give $10,000 or more, but no, $9,500 of it, $10,000 is actually going to go to whatever that mission is. So, I think it's really critical. Not only from nurturing their relationship so they give again the next year, they get it built into their budget, right, and it becomes a recurring gift, but also ensure that they understand what you're doing for these things, right, that you need to make. So, carefully thought about things.
So, to them, learning that language that maybe is natural or fundraiser is to understand, speaking another language. Speaking of which, Tom, I think this is very, very basic, but I find on our show this comes up quite a bit. Just the basic concept of what is the cloud confuses people. And you are in charge of that, why they have questions. So So how do you tell that story, and how do we make sure everyone here at the time and all of my listeners understand why is that a value and why should that not be immediately scary?
Thanks, Dad. And there are actually lots of people in charge of doing different parts of life on that direction here. So we're moving our product in that direction, not abandoning our on-premise users, but we're moving our product in that direction, moving our services post in that direction, we're moving our internal products in that direction. The cloud is actually where I'm doing the the cloud is really more of a movement than a specific thing. The way you deliver services now is Google, it's my checkbook, it's LinkedIn, it's all those things. And the nonprofit industry has been fairly slow to embrace that. You're seeing an acceleration. A lot of benefits to the nonprofit. So from a pure software perspective, you should expect the software to evolve more rapidly because you're not managing all the code, splitting out the market. You should expect greater security because you're not managing all the intricacies at each premise. Scale that with a company like Blackbaud managing that stuff for you. You should expect rapid evolution of that software. You should expect that the software will be more usable because you've got a lot of people feeding it. And you should expect, frankly, a much better economy as a nonprofit because you don't have to have the IT folks running all that stuff. Every nonprofit I've ever been associated with is scrap for IT people. So if I could give part of that problem to Blackbaud or then that's a great way to get a comment in detail. But it's more than just the software. It includes really the way you think about delivery, speed to value. So how much training did you do the last time you logged into Google? None, right? So that's a challenge for us to figure out how to deliver our products, which you turn them on, they always work, they're always on, they're always useful to deliver in real time. And that's the concept behind it. It's not scary in the slightest, but it is a change, right? People who say, well, I got to hold all this data in my shop, whatever my shop is, that's the only way to be secure. I think probably 5 years from now, we're going to think about that, and then I put all that data in after. And then we sort of think about checkbooks and things like that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you brought that topic up, because I have that discussion with my listeners on a pretty regular basis. What I always try to share with them is where you're concerned about security on the internet. Certainly, you should be aware of encryption technology, how does it work. But there, in my estimation, there's a far bigger security concern for most nonprofit organizations who have all their data sitting on a server or on a desktop in their office, no security whatsoever, and there's no backup, or the backup is never been tested. So if it's meaningful to decide if they're going to make that home with them, or if it will convert down, they've got no place to go. Whereas now with products available from the Blackbaud, how does that make sense?
Well, I'm certainly not the expert on security, so I won't pretend to be, but conceptually, the difference is I'm going to use a crime analogy. Big crimes, robbing a bank versus not doing a store. So if a bank gets robbed, everybody hears about it. The Target gets hacked, everybody hears about it. But what you don't hear about is the multiple small robberies where somebody broke into a store and took that. When you actually look at the crime statistics, they're way bigger. You don't hear about, now if I just extend that to the number of times something gets dropped, lost, a cup of coffee gets spilled in the server, and all the data disappears. All that stuff suggests that it is infinitely better for you to have somebody who's really good at managing all that stuff take care of that stuff for you. And should you kick the tires on the security? Absolutely, you should kick the tires on the security. Should you kick our tires on that? Absolutely, you should. I would expect nothing less. But to believe that it's not safer in one place that's managed with professionals all around you all the time, as opposed to your office or a desk, you're really not paying much attention to think about that. And certainly, guys with long technical degrees, you can plan all that stuff in lots of detail, but you have to be really attentive about professional protection. So we're very, very good at security and making sure that the data that our users are trusted is safe for sure.
Well, concept that you brought up, that, you know, IT is difficult for most nonprofits, those smaller and mid-sized nonprofits, but even larger nonprofits, as I was just talking to Mary Pat, that even if you're in a large organization and have a big IT team, but the fundraising development, the PR department is usually at the far end of the food chain before they get any kind of support. So having a company like Blackbaud that is so dedicated on making the technology easier, making it less likely to have that IT in place within your operation, really is a really good thing. You said it can be a budget saver. So we're going to go back to Mary Pat and our really next group here is coming. So we're going to go back to our really next group here is coming. Lots of changes have happened in the last several years. Lots of new companies creating the whole. How is all of that coming together? But it's certainly exciting, as you can see here, with some of the announcements on our legacy products, RageSet, NXT, and Financial Edge, NXT, Blackbaud CRM 4.0. There's a lot of stuff going on. Legacy products, some of the really compelling things that come out of our recent acquisitions is the expansion that you get with that really big cycle. It makes a lot of sense for the overall acquisition we just did with Travis a couple of months ago. The first time in many years since acquisitions done recently MicroEdge has been focused on non-fundraising acquisition. So it's really near adjacency. We believe will expand the capability and the functionality of the products that we have. The interesting on Whipple Hill is also the components from Whipple Hill, which is the largest funded in the schools, right? How do you interact with kids and parents and sports? All of those pieces and coupling them now and integrating with what we always had at Blackbaud, whether it's back in the school, raise the financial, all those pieces. So I think it gives a much more robust compelling solution now for K-12s. MicroEdge gives us a more complete work that we had planned, which is branding inside of the foundations and branding. We're hopeful over the years what will happen is we'll take a fundraising side of the organization to be following such a good partner. Couple that now with the foundation side of the grants. It should be exciting. I expect more of our efforts in the future will be focused on those kind of near adjacent and future functionality and getting into these raises. We're going to just take a very quick break here and then we'll be back with Tom and Tony to wrap up the show today.
Every day, millions of people are online, many of whom want to help, volunteer, and donate to a good cause. Nonprofit organizations can use many Google tools to reach potential donors around the world and raise more money. And as an approved nonprofit, it doesn't cost a thing. It's all free. Google Grants helps you promote your website with free advertising on Google.com through the AdWords program. With Google AdWords, you create ads and choose words or phrases related to your nonprofit organization. When people search on Google using one of your phrases, your ad will appear next to the Google search results under the sponsored link section. AdWords allows you to target certain geographic areas, dates, and times of day for your ads to appear. YouTube for Nonprofits is another tool that can boost donations to your organization. The program offers a number of perks that get your message out there and drive viewers to take action and donate. You can list your organization on YouTube's nonprofit channel and add call-to-action overlays on your videos to drive viewers to donate. Need help analyzing your website traffic and marketing effectiveness? Google Analytics is a free tool that will give you rich insight and help you increase the number of people that visit and donate to your site. Google Analytics can be invaluable to many people in your organization, such as development directors, marketing staff, and your web team. There are many other tools that can help you reach more donors and raise funds, like Google Checkout, where you can process credit card donations with no transaction fee, Google Sites to create a free website, and Website Optimizer, where you can figure out the best landing pages to turn site visitors into donors. To get started, apply for Google for Nonprofits today.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. Click on Radio Links. If you're listening live today, the phone lines are open. Call in and ask a question by dialing 347-324-3080. Now, back to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart.
And we are back here. We're just going to wrap up with Tom Pate and Tony Moore. Gentlemen, I just want to give you an opportunity to have one last comment to send our guests and maybe Tom away with, and also make sure that our guests know how to meet you. So we'll start with Tom.
Thanks, Dad. In keeping with the theme, but, I would urge our guests on your show to be on lots of things I heard from you, I suppose, but in keeping with our theme, I'd urge them to make sure that you challenge your board, challenge your leadership, take a leadership stance on developing a strategy. So strategy is not something that sits on the shelf, something that should be a living document, it should be part of what drives your operating plan. And if you don't have one, if you've ever seen a movie close to it, there's a moment where they say, does everybody have a moving value? If you don't have one, get one. If you don't have a clear strategy that articulates where the organization is going to be in 3 years, then you really need to get one. And that strategy should consider the things that have to happen in order to achieve it. So I'll illustrate that for you in the How to Affect Your Team, I think, this chapter. We ran about 800 missions a year, and we know that that's a certain accomplishment, but we also know that's not the goal. We ran 100 missions a year, right? That'd be about 1,500. So if we are content year after year, say, well, 800 plus 5%, we'll think it's worth that for us. Instead, we have to say, okay, what are we going to do? Bring that to life for you. It causes us to invest in somebody who's got the relationship to hospital with the community. Grant lots of wishes, you gotta have lots of kids who will be the wishes, and you gotta have wishes coming in. Now, I mean, just that around the room, given everybody lost 5%, such an effect, we have lost a number of individuals, 5%, so their CFO, it's 800 and 40, right? So you just take forever, but by strategically thinking through that, by finding the key investment. It clarified, and it actually answered a whole bunch of questions. The voltage made all the questions of where are we going to put our money for the next few years, it just went away, because we said, here are the five things we have to get put down. And while everybody had needs, nobody ever had enough resources. We brought our leadership team to the process for a reason. So I'm going to leave your audience with one message to keep you with me, going to be challenge your board, challenge your leadership, drive a strategy. It doesn't have to be 500 pages sitting at 53 pages. And translate that into 2, 3, 4 actionable items for the year. That's for reaching me. I'm fairly easy to reach. My name is simpler than Mary Pat. If you listen to the last second, tom.pate at blackpaw.com. Over to Tony.
Thank you, Tom. When I think about strategy and your question, Mama, it's an important topic for all of us from a strategic perspective. Even if you have large IT resources, as we have a large IT team that reports into me and have a CIO and spend a great deal of money on infrastructure and security, backup and disaster recovery, and all of those things, we use data centers and all of our on premise solutions that we run our business, right? And I use to close our books and report as a public company. And our strategy is to move to the cloud. So I would argue this is something we would need to contemplate as part of our strategy. We launched 6 new systems this year and replaced 21 open spare IT systems. Tom Pate's been a big help with that, as Todd Land has. All 6 of those new platforms are in the cloud, and we don't have license. So they're all rented and they're all in the cloud. Why? Because it's a better answer on the phone. It's a better return on investment, better security. You have the latest and greatest at all times. It's a good means of helping you manage your customization. We always want to customize the product. We want to use it. Nice thing about renting products in the cloud, it's more of a commodity approach. So by definition, you're not going to customize. Everybody's using best practice. You're always on the latest version. You always have the latest version of security controls, right? The latest version of security software. You're going to be on the latest, greatest hardware. You don't have to go through upgrade cycles. You don't have to go through the cycle of buying software support. So I would urge you to think about that as part of your strategy as well as your longer term plans for the organization itself. And as far as contact, easy as well. Tony and Tom, thank you so much for being with us live here in Nashville at EBCon 2014. Now, next up, We have a very special guest, Jeff Shenack is here. Just in a few moments, I promise you, Jeff, that you have, I understand that he's late. I'm going to give Jeff a few moments. I promise that Rick is here as well to step in and pinch hit here when we didn't think we had a guest. So, Jeff, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about your company up in Canada and what you do with them, why you are here.
Thanks, Ted. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the introduction. Again, my name is Jeff Knack. I work with the company Bronco Community Solutions. We are race edge and black belt consultants here in Canada. And I'm here at BBCon to share the knowledge to what's happening with the exciting black belt has. Just that through the race edge team session, which is great for new customers or business customers.
And how can our listeners reach you?
They can tweet me if they want, at JEFFGIGNAC. They can email me, jeff@jhsolutions.com. I also encourage everyone to check out the hashtag BBCon today, as there are lots of tweeting by myself and other people about all the features that's going to be in NXT. I know I'm very fast to talk about some of them. There's a lot more to do with my own. Comments and cheers from the crowd.
That's Jeff Shenack here live, and I'm so happy to be on. I know we do. Thank you. We have our final guest here on the Nonprofit Touch. Robert Barker is the co-founder of Barker and Scott Consulting. Barker and Scott Consulting assists leading regional, national, and international nonprofit organizations with leveraging the power information technology for organizational advancement and mission success. Doug, that is a topic that's come up several times here today. It's certainly come up here at Blackhawk DB Time and comes up here on the nonprofit building all the time. Everyone wants to be successful. Very few people know how to. So, Doug Barker, welcome here to the nonprofit building.
Thank you, Tim. It's great to be here. I think success has many different aspects to it. And we look at it, we really look at it as a field and strategy for that, from the center, and how you do that. We look at aligning your people and your skill sets, your engagement structure, the goals you have. We look at alignment with the technology that you're utilizing. We look at alignment with the data and make sure you're really maintaining and growing the data. We also look at the processing out.
Now, for a lot of organizations, they hire fundraisers because they need the money, and they don't think internally, they don't reflect internally on what it takes to organize to be successful. Why is that such a challenge?
I think the challenge is to deal with kind of the balance between the short term and the long term. Companies are very, very focused on what they need to do in the short term, and they're playing around raising that next dollar, and really having to create a team. I think the organizations are most successful, take a longer view. They don't ignore their immediate pressing needs for the day, they take a longer view and what they're going to need in place.
I'm going to challenge you to think of this in a slightly different way. As I think we started the show today, Shannon and Vanessa and I were exploring this concept that while the fundraisers within a nonprofit organization can very readily tell you if they're not successful, why they're not successful, they don't have support within the organization, they don't have the tools that they need. I have ascertained here on this show for quite some time that to a certain extent, fundraisers are living in glass houses and do not often take the time to integrate themselves into the culture, into the organization itself, and to help them top to bottom understand how fundraising is done. In fact, many times we are our own worst enemy. And making it seem like that, making it seem like something that cannot be claimed for money just coming in. So, all of these things.
fundraising team and the rest of the organization. How do the organization work?
I think there are a couple of different ways. One is really integrate your fundraising immediately into the organization. Give them a complete tour of the organization, get them out programmatically with their colleagues to meet and know the goals that they're serving. And it's also so important because ultimately, good fundraisers are ones that are passionate about the organization, speak to it from a personal knowledge. So I think it's critical that they really understand what it takes to deliver on the mission and programmatic goals. And then the second one deals more with having the person really understand the goals instead of operation, what happens as well. So really orienting them around financial side of the house, for the director, leadership, the overall goals of the organization, and also to make them more effective fundraisers as well. Really wanting fundraisers to feel they are part of the process of the organization. And I think that a lot comes down to the CEO or the ED in particular, setting that kind of a set of expectations and that kind of culture to really have the fundraisers be an integral part of.
As an organizational expert, you probably know the name of Stuart and share with my listeners. Many people have heard of Mike Bloomberg, now former mayor of New York. At one time, he chaired a fundraising campaign at John Hopkins. And I was very impressed with his keen financial and liberal mind. And one of the first things he did was the campaign to take a look at the production value of a major growth officer and informed the organization that they must hire 20 more major growth officers before this campaign can be successful. It's not often that you have someone in leadership who understands the need to be properly tooled for a campaign that focuses on how much they're going to raise on the field, what they're going to say, and doing it as an organization of experts. How do you help leadership understand their role in success of fundraising?
Through my experience, I think people get inspired the most to change when they see other organizations successfully done that. So one of the key tools that I use is the case study. I share with PDs and the board and others what other organizations have done successfully to prepare for campaigns. And no one case study, no one organization has all the answers. No one case study is a perfect, shoe-in to exactly what's going to happen in another organization. But by sharing the story of what has worked, what hasn't worked, how it worked in different organizations, you inspire people to be thinking outside of the box, start to think about what they need to put in place. And we start providing them with a number of things that they invested in the main HIP officers, things that they invested in technology, they invested in back office operations to make that happen, and then there was what was raised and then it opened their eyes to realize it's not just about the focus on how much you're going to raise, but not even how much you're actually going to achieve that goal. And not necessarily a lot of good data points out there that show here's the formula and here's what you need to work with to make.
What are some of them, or even just one, a unique story that you're aware of that helps frame that for some folks that you want to
This actually goes back to when I was Chief Information Officer at the Nature Conservancy. And we had just completed a 300, quite a while ago, back in the 90s. So a story that resonates. We had just completed a $300 million. And completing it, it's pretty much the completion of the CEO all of very important supporters of the board of directors who were able to make their appointment. We started looking at what we really needed to do to be true to our mission, preserving the place of the that matters to people. And part of that, the board started talking about a $500 million. They said it's $1 billion. We as a staff realized we need to change the way we were doing it. And we started putting in place a sort of operations by design for a new conservation program. It included creating major DIP officers with dollar space rather than just the different sector directors out there, including consolidation of all direct response programs, including moving a particular database, one enterprise system, including multiple systems, but also including different ways of revenue sharing and different ways to share and think about building the revenue model or really think about the information service to cultural change as well. So it's really multi-pronged in terms of that, that level of change. But the bottom line for me is that often those kinds of big changes happen through what I'll call a crisis tuning, whether that crisis, in this particular case, one realizing that we were losing the overall war in terms of winning some battles in terms of doing good preservation projects, but on the whole, we were still losing the environmental cost. And it created a crisis and created an idea for the organization that we needed to do differently. Doug, it's such a pleasure to have you here. We only have about 2 announcements left on the show, but I can't actually, without asking you to give us a minute's worth of what is Leadership 2.0. Today, we spoke about how to harness a data-driven culture. How does all that fit? And you've got a good minute and a half. And before you end, I also need to summarize what's going to talk about the future. I'll actually start with how they can reach me and then come to Doug at barkerandscott.com. Doug at eatmakemark.com. Leadership 2.0, the journey forward in your data at the organization. It's all about making deliberate smart investments in capturing the right kind of constituent information, maintaining and staying up to date on a regular basis, and then harvesting that data for better decisions. And in the session, we shared some wonderful examples from the Alzheimer's Association, Research Hospital, and from the Arthritis Foundation, wonderful ways to go through the organization. Really Doug, I can't thank you enough for helping us wrap up the special edition of the Nonprofit Coach here live in Nashville at BD Time. Just for my listeners, we will have a 2-week hiatus, so you'll be able to catch up on hundreds of podcasts at techparts.com. We will be back live on October 28th with Susan Black, the author of trainer Susan Black, CFRE, will be live here on the Nonprofit Coach. For our host, Black Rod, I want to thank you for listening today. I want to thank all of our guests today for being so terrific and sharing such great up-to-date information here on the Nonprofit Coach.
You've been listening to the Nonprofit Coach Radio Show with Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcasts at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Coach.